Hello and welcome to The Tips, a betting preview podcast from the ZP World Tour. My name's Ollie Silverton. I'm back this week. I'm glad and surprised I got it back. Kit obviously did a fantastic job. And we are going to look ahead to the Nedbank Golf Challenge, the penultimate event on the ZP World Tour season, and then also the beautifully named Butterfield Bermuda Championship on the PGA Tour. Before we start, it is important to note that this podcast is aimed at listeners aged 18 and over. All odds were accurate at the time of recording, and the betting information is aimed at a UK audience only. Please remember to gamble responsibly, and for more information, visit begambleaware.org. Music sting. Yes, we have special guests, and they are truly special. We've got Steve Bamford from Golf Betting Systems podcast for his second appearance, and wow, he nearly had a famous debut. I'm sure we'll talk about that. And then we've also got, welcome back, Ben Coley from Sporting Life, who's, well, we're honoured to have him back after a little bit of time off. So Ben, we're going to come to you first. Paternity leave, obviously, got you very well. You've got colour on your face and your jumper on your hat and your walls. Let's get into the golf. Were you across it much at all? We had the Challenge Tour Grand Final. Some incredible storylines there with Marco Penn jumping up the places to get that done. And of course, the Worldwide Technology Championship. With what a finish that was from a very emotional, and rightfully so, Erik van Rooyen. What did you make of the events?
Yeah, I mean, van Rooyen was really special, wasn't it? I tuned in for the bit where the tournament transformed, really. I think I saw the last three holes. Obviously, priorities have been elsewhere the last few weeks, but it was great. I mean, he spoke beautifully afterwards, and I don't think there's a lot I can add, really. You know, anyone who missed it, his close college friend doesn't have long to live, and he was very much playing with that in mind throughout the week. And with another college friend on the bag, I don't know, fairy tale's not the right phrase, is it? I don't know what the right phrase is, but I'm sure that meant a lot. As for the Challenge Tour, obviously a fabulous performance by Marco Penn. He's a player who I think for a few years now has been on a lot of people's radars. You know, he's got a lot of talent. He hits the ball a long way. All the skills you'd think to perform at a higher level than he had done. And I really think the Open Championship, I've not heard any interview from him, whether he referenced this or not. He probably didn't. But I really think the Open Championship was a bit of a springboard for him. We saw a number of players from lower tiers qualify, as we always do, but use it as a springboard. Alex Fitzpatrick, Brandon Robinson-Thompson, Sam Bairstow, and Marco Penge, who since July has really kicked on. So obviously a new test for him up on the DP World Tour, but he's got a chance now. And with his talent, I could see him doing really well. But for now, it's been a transformative 3 months for him, and we'll see how he does. I'm sure he's got his eyes set on those early season events in November and December.
Absolutely, yeah. I remember clocked into an interview, and it was all talking about he was given, allowed to leave school at 15 to chase the career. He was under 15 champion, under 16. So feels like it's been coming. And Steve, from your side last week, I don't think you had Erik van Rooyen, but a good friend on the podcast of yours that you do, what was across him. So that firstly, and then also, any other storylines you like from the Challenge Tour? I mean, Matteo Manassero, obviously, getting that birdie late on. A couple of exciting names for us to keep an eye on.
It'd be great to see Matteo back on the main tour. It's what, 7-8 years ago, one of the leading lights, one of the leading European talents, if you like, especially coming up at that point of time, and the way that his career has clearly gone down to that Challenge Tour level. So to see him back is fantastic. Worthy of note, actually, Ben just alluded to it. Some of this fresh talent that hits the main tour as of December, you know, you've only got to look at Dan Bradbury last year, came up from the Challenge Tour, and then, you know, he took away the Joburg Open in late November last year. So, you know, these guys can come to the main tour and actually win. In terms of the Worldwide Technology Championship, that was a mouthful, that one. WWC.
WWT.
WWT. My colleague on the Golf Betting System podcast, Barry O'Hanrahan, he landed Erik, and it 80-1, I believe. But yes, I know a lot of people also loaded up on Friday on him again, because I think he was something like 4 off the lead. Yeah. Or 6 off the lead, but that was Cam Percy, and people were saying they were still getting 80-1 in play going into the second round. So I know that was quite a big community victory across X and, you know, just across regular golf bettors, that Erik van Rooyen victory. Yeah. Also, can I just say congratulations to Ben, of course, on on his new ball, and it's all good news.
Absolutely. When you see the little clip outs of this, you'll see an inundation of cards. Birthday. I think I've got boy behind you written on them. Congratulations. So there we go. It's great to have you on, hopefully picking loads of winners too, so he can get the best baby gear and all the golf outfits that you can feed him out for. Love it. Well, there you go. That's last week covered off. It's now time to get stuck into this week as we've got action on both the DP World Tour and the PGA Tour. We're going to start in South Africa with the Nedbank Golf Challenge. It's at the Gary Player Country Club in Sun City, which is a great venue. If any of you can get there, well worth a trip. Since its inception in 1981, it has attracted some serious stars, and it's doing the same this year with some Americans making the journey over and some serious winners. The likes of Seve's done it there, Sir Nick Faldo as well. It is very exciting, and it's the penultimate event, as already mentioned. So good chance to get up to the Race to Dubai standings before heading to the Earth Course at Jumeirah Golf Estates next week. Ben, you first. I had a little look on your Twitter, and you have written your preview and said it's one of your favourite events of the year. What is it that makes it so special for you?
I guess nostalgia, among other things. But the timing as well. You wake up on Friday morning, you turn on Sky Sports, and there you go. We see so much golf in this tournament. We see most of the players. Even now, obviously, the field's bigger than it used to be. That's changed slightly. Familiarity as well. I think it's a fabulous golf course. I'm sure most people listen to a podcast like this know plenty about Sun City already. But for those who might be new, it's a very long golf course, almost 7,900 yards, for a long time been the longest on the DP World Tour. Doesn't play that long in South Africa, as they tend not to, but it still does demand players hit a lot of driver and three wood. But it's a very familiar event that I've always enjoyed watching. And it's one where we get to see, from the very first hole. And I'm so glad, actually, that they've gone back to the regulation routing. I think it was the 2020 SA Open amid the chaos of 2020 when Danny Van Tonder won by holding a really nice putt on the what we know as the ninth green. It was the 18th for that year. And I think it might have been the year Christian Bezuidenhout who won as well. They've gone back to the 1-18 routing, which I think is great. It means you've got those back-to-back par fives around the turn. So your guy's plodding along at even par. All of a sudden, you can be on the 11th tee at 3 under. And then obviously after the par five midway through the back nine, you've got a really difficult finish. And that 18th hole, if you don't put your ball in the fairway, is a real test. So just a fabulous golf course, always a good field. Stronger this year than last year, thanks to a few invites, which is fantastic. And also obviously plays a key part in the Race to Dubai. So yeah, what's not to love?
Yeah, couldn't agree more. Well, Sen, you mentioned the course, and Steve, we obviously know it pretty well. We've seen it a fair few times for a while now. And I mentioned some of these winners. If we look over the last 20 years, there's been a lot of multiple winners. You've got Ernie Els in there, Jim Furyk's done a few times, and of course, Tommy Fleetwood going for the three-peat, obviously a couple of years off in between, but it was still counts. So when you were doing your preview, did you really focus on, it's often the recent form versus course form, is this somewhere that tends much more to course form?
I think you just go through those winners, some of which you've mentioned there. Jim Furyk, also Lee Westwood, Tommy Fleetwood. For me, those players are top-end ball strikers, grinders in the case of Furyk, fairways and greens. And that this course, to me, really plays to that ilk of player. Also, of course, very, very slick, very pure bent grass greens here as well. So we know, just from covering the golf, some players prefer the Bermuda grass. Last week, over in Mexico, we had the Paspalum. This week, bent grass, pure bent grass down in South Africa. And that will appeal to quite a few in this field who tend to go very well on those bent grass putting surfaces. Bit of a driving test here, I'd suggest. As Ben mentioned, close to 7,900 yards. I know it's at altitude, which does clearly bring that yardage down, circa 6-8%. But driver-heavy golf course, and if you are missing fairways here, you can get yourself into some serious, thick rough and bushes, trees, all manner of hazards. So I think strong drivers, high greens in regulation are the kind of players that we're looking for this week. And players that have got a leaning towards bent grass greens would be ideal.
Great, yeah. And having been there, I can tell you, if you're offline, you don't want to be diving into the Bundai too far. There are some seriously lively things going on around there. Ben, you mentioned some of the exciting names, and these are guys who won't know the course very well at all. But it is great for the event, isn't it, really, that we've got the likes of Max Homer, Justin Thomas, and I think I even read Justin Rose hasn't been here for 10 years now. I think it was 2013, if my sheet's right. And even some of the younger guys like Vincent Norman. It gives it the event another sort of step up, doesn't it, in terms of that?
It does, because the nature of events like this, and we see it in the old, we have seen it in the old FedEx Cup system, when you've got an event where essentially most of the field qualifies, not because of their status or their category, but by how they have played in events that season, you will invariably end up with some guys who played really well in the spring and actually now are kind of out of form. We've got a number of those. And you think about the FedEx Cup as it used to be. You win the Bermuda Championship, the event we're going to be discussing this week. 10 months later, you might be in the playoffs, having done very little else in the interim. One of the flaws, one of the positives of the system, depending on your perspective. But what they've been able to do this week is add to the field with some seriously big names via the tournament invitations. You know, I think three of the top five or six in the betting are tournament invites, which is quite rare and kind of unique to a field like this one, where essentially someone like Justin Rose, he didn't qualify because he hasn't played enough events on the DP World Tour. So yeah, great to see the willingness of Max Hopper and Justin Thomas to come over. I mean, I don't want to go overboard. I think sometimes we get a bit carried away with, oh, isn't it great that these guys are willing to, it's not a hardship to go to Africa, go on safari and then play for a couple of $1 million, right? It's a privilege that they have. But nevertheless, you know, it's been a little while since we've seen the best of the Americans come over. And okay, they might not be the very best of the Americans, but they're both Ryder Cup team members and certainly not far off. And it'd be interesting to see where Justin Thomas is with his game. Obviously, Max Homer's retained a high level of consistency the last few months. The worry with both would be that they've not played a lot of golf. They've not played since the Ryder Cup. And to get used to a course where, you know, back in the day when we had the Nedbank here, the simple start point when you had a field of 10, just put a line through all the debutants. So, you know, times change. We've got a bigger field and these are world-class players. But I do think it's a mark against both of them that they've not been here before.
Yeah, I have to agree with you. As you say, they've not played a lot of golf recently, but especially in South Africa, ever particularly, it is a bit of a different beast. And you say, I wonder where Justin Thomas's game's at. Well, his social media game's been great. He's clearly loving the hardship that is safari and getting out and around. So let's have a look, as we mentioned a few of the names at the top of the market. We've got, as mentioned, Tommy going for the three-peat around the 8th mark, and same with Max Homer around 8-1. Justin Thomas, we can find just after that. He's around 12s there, as is Ryan Fox, who's just finding some great form on and off the course with the gong shot. You may have seen that piece of content as well. He's 14-1. And then Maron at 16s and into Justin Rose, get rounds off the top six there at about 20s, you can still get for him. So let's hear who you guys like. Look, I'm Steve, I'm going to come to you first. Who's going to open up this week for the Nedbank?
I'm going with Aaron Rye, 25-1. Is it top 50 in the Race to Dubai that qualify for the DP World Tour Championship next week? There's a cutoff. It's around about 50.
Yeah.
It tends to vary slightly year on year. Mm. It was 50 last year. But yes, Rye clearly focused this year mainly on the PGA Tour, in which he's done, you know, very, very well. 12th at Colonial. He was third at the RBC Canadian Open. That was the one they played at that tree-lined Oakdale course in Toronto. 9th at Detroit, where they played the Rocket Mortgage. You know, in most people's thinking, we will remember his T2 performance at Wentworth last month, where he came within a shot of Ryan Fox in a playoff. And that, you know, you just look at those courses: Detroit tree lined, Oakdale tree lined, Colonial short again, classical, a tree lined affair, Wentworth. The kind of course you have to really navigate around fairways and greens. And this is what I'm thinking with Rye. He's a very, very high-quality ball striker. Current form, 28th at the Shriners. He went back post-Wentworth to America, 28th at the Shriners. Probably a little bit too low scoring there, too much emphasis on putting. 21st at the Zozo when he went over to Japan to Narashino. 9th last time out at Qatar, where actually he was the nemesis always with Aaron is the putting. There have been signs recently that he's putting at neutral from a strokes gain perspective or even better. And that makes him a dangerous animal, I think, here, where fairways, greens, the absolute key. He's decent enough on bent grass. We know that he can win strong Rolex Series events on the DP World Tour. He's just one of those guys that would come from just below the bigger names there and potentially take this one out, I think. He's 61st in the race to Dubai as well, so needs a good week to guarantee himself that top 50 spot to get into the Earth Course, the DP World Tour Championship next week.
Yeah, and the world golf rankings as well, I think he's 63rd, so it's a very similar situation. Basically, if Aaron Wright were to win this tournament, he takes care of a heck of a lot of business. He gets into the DP World Tour Championship. He earns starts in majors next year. I mean, there's a heck of a lot to play for here, and they're among the reasons why I'm very much on the same lines as Steve there. I think it's a big chance for him. He's played here twice before. He was 8th on debut. I mean, to do that on debut, he was a rookie. He was not playing particularly well, and he came here and he took to it. And then he was 13th on his second go. When again, he'd been fairly quiet. And I think, you know, it's 4 years ago now. He subsequently won the Scottish Open, biggest title of his career, beat Tommy, obviously, in that playoff. And I think he's come quite a long way. I mean, after Qatar, that 9th place, where I think he finished birdie, eagle to get into this event. That was his career high world ranking. So that says it all about where we are with Aaron Rye versus 3 or 4 years ago. So yeah, big chance for him. And I think as well, a big chance for Justin Rose. I think of those big names at the top of the market, he was the one who was touching 20-1, you know, a bigger price than Ryan Fox and Adrian Mironko. And I totally understand that, both recent winners on the DP World Tour. But Justin, I mean, I guess people might look at his form and think he's gone off the boil, but he's had two of the worst putting weeks of his career. At Wentworth and then in Spain. In between the two, he putted perfectly fine to my eye at the Ryder Cup. I didn't see any major issues there. And if it is just the putter we're worrying about, I mean, his approach stats were both, he gained over 6 strokes on approach in both of those tournaments either side of the Ryder Cup. That's the sort of level of ball striking he was producing when he was winning on the PGA Tour, when he was 9th in the PGA Championship, when he played well at Sawgrass, when he could have won the Canadian Open. You know, he's basically hitting the ball to the same standard as when he was producing world-class form. And as far as the rest of it goes, I mean, you mentioned Ollie, he's not been a regular starter here. He was 7th 10 years ago, very much at the peak of his powers. But obviously, born in Johannesburg, first pro title came in South Africa. I think he's won twice in about 15 starts in South Africa down the years. He'll be really glad of this opportunity to come back. I know he could have come back sooner, but schedules and living out over the other side of the Atlantic played a part in that. But now he's got everything to play for. He just about needs to win if he wants to get into the DP World Tour Championship. I think he's 91st on the race to Dubai. Solo second might do it, but I think ultimately he probably needs to win. So lots of incentive, his game in a good place. And if the putter warms up, you look at this roll of honour and the name Justin Rose would make perfect sense.
Absolutely right. Okay. Well, they are, yeah, did you say Justin Rose, you can still get 20s and Aaron Rye, there's in places 25. So that's an English duo to kick us off. And I think you're right, he had a bit of poor form, but it's amazing what the Ryder Cup can do just to energise you, incentivise you and get you back into, it's not quite the winner's circle individually, but it is as a team. So it could go a long way for JR and Aaron Rye. I mean, no one will be practising harder. I remember seeing him a few years in Portugal. He took 5.5 hours for the front nine, just playing a one ball. I've never seen the greenskeeper trying to cut greens and just waiting for Aaron to go around and do his gloves. So two very popular picks, I think, overall there to kick us off. Steve, who's the second name you're gonna throw at us?
I'm sticking with this PGA Tour narrative, dropping back. Matt Wallace, 40-1. So 55th in the race to Dubai, been playing quite a lot of DP World Tour action over the late summer. Second at the Czech Masters in August. He was 6th at the Dunhill Links and 9th last time out in Qatar. So he's playing some great stuff. And we know with Matt Wallace, clearly can mix it at DP World in the DP World Tour. Certainly can win at this level as well. He won, of course, this year on the PGA Tour over at Corrales. So the PGA Tour card's all sewn up. He's got no concerns about that. Can focus solely now on the DP World Tour and getting into that DP World Tour Championship next week. That effort in Qatar is very, very noticeable and just worthy of note on the basis a fortnight ago. He was positive across every statistic from a strokes game perspective. And Matt can be one of these guys that can be very, very competitive or can miss a cut quite badly. But it was interesting. His game was firing on all cylinders, off the tee, approach, around the green, and with the putter as well. He was fifth here in 2018, so he's got course experience. He's got top five here. And actually, just when you look at Matt Wallace and you look at some of the golf courses that he's played well over in the United States, I can remember him playing very well at San Antonio. That's a tough golf course down in Texas where decent, strong driving's very much required. We know that he's done well at Muirfield Village over the years. And of course, he's performed well in PGA Championships in the past over in the States as well. So classical, long, tree-lined, tougher golf courses is something that Matt Wallace can certainly cope with. I thought 40-1 was a decent price on him this week. Again, plenty of incentive to do well down in South Africa this week.
Yeah, 40-1 is stuck around as well from those Monday prices, which is lovely to see. And we've said it a few times. He's been mentioned, I think, the last 3 weeks, not always tipped, but it's been right up there. We know he's a very competitive guy and loves it and does tune in occasionally. So we're hoping he goes well. 40-1's nice. Okay, so we've got both of you loving Aaron Ryan, and we've got Rose and Wallace. A very English theme to this week. Yeah. We then open it up a bit, don't we, for a bit more long shot action. I think, Ben, you've got a couple of genuine long shots in a limited field.
Yeah, I'll give a nod for Brandon Grace, who I found hard to weigh up. I mean, sort of default mode when we go to South Africa is I need to find some South Africans because they are an advantage, you know. I mean, we see it time and again. You know, Ockie Strydom, probably the best example from this season, won at enormous odds in South Africa prior to Christmas. And I was trying to find one. You know, you can make a case for Grace. I'm not totally convinced where his form or fitness are at the moment. Thriston Lawrence, Henny de Plessis, proper ball strikers. Either one of those had a good putting week, then they'd go well. But I've kept going further and I have found a sort of distant connection to South Africa. Not that it necessarily will help his golf, but Jason Scrivener was in fact born in South Africa in Cape Town and did move to Australia till he was about 10 years old. But the case for him here is more nuts and bolts, if you like. He played really well in 2018 and 2019 at the course. You know, third in 2019 behind Tommy and Marcus Kinnell. Was a fantastic effort. He didn't putt well that week, and generally speaking, throughout his career, that club's been one of his strengths. And I've just felt he's been coming to the boil after a really poor spring and early summer by his standards. And he was finally rewarded for some eye-catching performances when he finished in the top 10 in Qatar last time. Suddenly, he's now got a chance to qualify for the DP World Tour Championship. And the good thing there is that he's been here and done it before, because in that 2019 Nedbank, I think he was 57th, something like that, in the race to Dubai. He was asked about it all week. You know, you need a top five, top six finish to qualify for Dubai, and he finished third. And that's really one of the best performances of his entire career. So loads of good memories, a good course for him. He's a very neat and tidy golfer, something Steve alluded to at the top there. When he's on, he is a fairways and greens golfer, and I don't think he's far away. So hopefully he can play well. And probably a bit more of a flyer, but I think if you were to ask me about the sort of underachievers, and that's no, you know, underachieving can mean many different things. And in this case, it means someone who has struggled with the putter and has had a load of injury problems. But Sean Crocker has the game to go and play at the very highest level if he can figure out the putter. It hasn't necessarily happened for him yet. When it did at St Andrews, Fairmont St Andrews last year, he obviously won his first DP World Tour title. I've just got an inkling that this is a good course for him. He's only played it once last year and he was really badly out of form and finished mid-pack. He comes back with his long game, having really turned a corner. I think top 10 in strokes gained tee to green the last twice. There's no point me sitting here and trying to make a coherent case for him suddenly putting well. It'll either happen or it won't. There's really a great deal of random involved in that. But if he continues to strike the ball as he has, that alone can take him close. We saw Tommy, when he won it the first time, lost strokes on the greens. And if you look down the roll of honour here, you know, Lee Westwood, a multiple winner, Sergio Garcia, Jim Furyk, Ernie Els, not guys who are known necessarily, probably Furyk aside at his best, for holding putt after putt. The key assignment here is to keep the ball in play, set up opportunities, take care of the par fives, and Sean Crocker does that. And, you know, if he misses a few four-footers, we'll swallow our medicine there. But I think he's... an interesting one. And again, in terms of those connections, not quite to South Africa, but he was born in Zimbabwe. So we've got something to tie ourselves to there as well.
We do. I like it. Yeah, the neighbouring Zimbabwe, and he's under the US flag banner now. And Scriven, I think there's a lot of people believe in when your mates do well. And we've seen a bit of that. And obviously, Dan Hillier had it with Foxy. And I know Scriven's very close with Foxy as well, his Antipodean counterpart. And he'll see how his career trajectory just keeps going, so may want to be a part of that. Steve, what about yourself? One or two final names to throw our way a bit further down the list?
I'm an old romantic when it comes to golf betting, I'm afraid, and that costs me a lot of money over the years. I would love to see Marcel Siem do well this week. Marcel Siem at 55-1. He's 43 years of age, and this is probably his best chance to get to spend a year, 2024, playing on the PGA Tour. He's sitting in 13th spot in terms of the top 10 non-exempts that can go and play PGA Tour golf from 2024. So he's just below the cut line. And with CM, you can see just the way that he's been playing recently. Fourth in Madrid and also seventh at Sotto Grande, respectively, in those two of his last three outings. Motivated, very, very emotional chap. Lives over in Mauritius, doesn't he? German. He's got good form out in South Africa. He actually won his first tour event way back in 2004. It was the Dunhill Championship in South Africa. He won that at the Houghton Golf Club. So he plays well in South Africa, and he's also got decent form here. A fourth on debut back in 2014. He's also finished sixth here at the 2020 South African Open that Ben alluded to a few minutes ago when it was played here. Just interesting stats with CM. 13th and 7th for tee to green across those two Spanish outings. That translated to 2nd and 11th for strokes gained on approach as well. So, you know, big opportunity for a lot of players this week in terms of this PGA Tour route. CM, I think he's the kind of player that may well, rather than shy away from that could actually motivate him, and that could see him potentially contend this week. You know, a big week this week for Marcel CM. The other one, I did note this individual earlier on in the pod, Dan Bradbury, 125-1, did win the Joburg Open in November, which they clearly play at altitude down in South Africa. He beat then Sami Falimäki, who we know just recently won in Qatar. That was one of his first main tour events after getting promoted out of the Challenge Tour. And it's just noticeable with Bradbury, since then, hasn't done a great deal, but the last couple of events, sixth at the Spanish Open, 13th last time out at the Andalusia Masters. He was 9th for strokes going off the tee, 21st for approach, 20th for tee to green. Across, those are season-long statistics. So if we're looking for that kind of player that's fantastic from tee to green, decent off the tee, straight and long, and also a high GIR approach player, Dan Bradbury's frailties tend to be with the putter. If he can actually keep the positive putting going and just play to the level that he can from tee to green, 125-1, could be a big price this week on Dan Bradbury.
Perfect. Well, there you go. Some lovely and nice to sort of synergy of ending and starting with some Englishmen. Anyone, there's people in betting have funny superstitions at times, don't they? And I feel like Marcel Siem, you might be on a year early there, because when we look at it, 2024 is the number four. He's 44. He came fourth 4 weeks ago. He came fourth here on his debut. I feel like there's a bit going on there. But either way, 55, and he's one of the great characters on tour, as you say, and a lot of people wanting to do well. So there you go. We've got a fair few names for you there overall. And of course, we'll recap at the end. There's one more name I'm going to throw at you now, and that is during our game, our weekly game of Who Am I? It always brings a smile to Ben Coley's face when I mention this.
I've missed it.
I thought you had. Your new son hasn't been as offering as much in the Who Am I yet, but one day he'll get there. So how this works is, if you are first time joining, is that I pick a player and I give some random facts and figures and stats about them who I think will go well this week, and the guys will jump in each time and try work out who it is. So let's get underway. And I always start with the same one, just to put the feelers out, a gentle loosener. And that is that I've earned just over 7 million euros in my career. Career earnings are just over 7 million. Are we going to throw any names out for the big start?
Yeah, of course.
That's nice and generic, isn't it?
Torbjørn Olsen. He's probably had a lot.
He's not Olsen. Steve, you go for the one and done. You're going to sit on it and have another.
Oh, I'll sit. Go on. Go to number two.
This is great. I love the different tactics. Some people don't talk to the four. Ben throws a name every time, and it's the way to do it. 100%. No issues for not doing that. My first win as a professional was on the MENA tour.
Robert McIntyre.
Ben Coley, very good indeed. That is Robert McIntyre is the correct answer. Second go as well. I will go through the other ones. I've been as high as 42 in the world was the clue number three, which probably would have helped you out a fair bit. Number four, I won the Sir Henry Cotton Rookie of the Year Award in 2019.
And if Shinty doesn't get a mention in clue five, you've let yourself down.
I didn't do Shinty for that exact reason. And I'm undefeated in my Ryder Cup career was actually number five. But very good from the MENA tour in the Middle East, obviously. Very good from you. So he's mine. He's, I think, around the 30 mark still. 33's Bob McIntyre. And yeah, just a fancy ball striker. Just that always comes to me. Keep balls in play. Hopefully, again, if you can hold some putts. But there you go. That's Who Am I. Reminder, if you love a game but don't want to bet, then the fancy game on the DP World Tour website is the place for you. You pick a team of six, and we've just given you eight names. Well, nine if you want to include mine, but do that cautiously. And you can pick a team and go against friends, families, and everyone else. So it's good fun and some prizes there to be won as well. But now it's time to turn our attention over the Atlantic to the PGA Tour. Yeah, that's right. It is the PGA Tour, and it's a great name. It's the Butterfield Bermuda Championship on the back of the Worldwide Technology Championship. Feels like you need some alliteration towards this part of the season over there. And it's a cracking event over the last couple of years. It's at the Royal Port Golf Course on the island, a beautiful island of Bermuda, and it's a big one. Despite the field probably being a little bit weaker and people moving over to the Ned Bank and having a rest, because the winner of the event will gain an exemption until the end of 2026, as well as qualifying for the Masters, the Players, and the PGA Championship. So that's why we do see some star attractions in there, like Adam Scott, for example, and Lucas Glover as well. So Steve, with that, there is actually plenty online with this event, you know, with the invites to majors and exemptions. Is that something that you think will play on these guys' minds a lot, and also a sort of event we can find someone who's potentially a little bit lesser known? Because we saw in recent times it's certainly helped with some of the, let's go, not say lesser names, but European names as well. I was looking at some of the results in recent times. And, you know, we had Dietrich losing out to Seamus Power last time around. So is that something you think that'll be on their mind?
This is the time of year, isn't it? Especially now that we've got the PGA Tour extending through this fall portion to then start the regular season at the start of 2024. They're aligning it again with the calendar. So you've got a number of angles. You've got official World Golf Ranking top 50 spot. Ben mentioned this earlier in the podcast. That starts to tick a lot of boxes. I mean, you get a Masters invite before Christmas if you're in the top 50 at the turn of the year. So getting into that world's top 50 is a big, big deal. Noticeably, Seamus Power, when he won this last year, was 48th in the world. So this tournament cemented that top 50 spot. Got him into a lot of, got him into the Masters and ticked a lot of boxes in terms of being able to get into top quality events in 2024 with that world top 50 spot. So that's one. You've then got this next 10 situation on the PGA Tour where those ranked from 51 to 60 getting to the AT&T Pebble Beach and also the Genesis Invitational at the start of 2024. Those are two big signature events. So that's been a carrot throughout this fall series, getting into that 51 to into one of those 51 to 60 berths. And the final one, and the one that I always really like to keep a close eye on, is top 125 in the FedEx Cup, because clearly, if you are top 125 on the FedEx Cup at the end of the RSM Classic next week, you have full playing privileges for 2024, giving you the ability to basically pick your own schedule, apart, of course, from signature events. So, you know, there's as with golf as ever, there's a lot of intricacies in there in terms of different targets for different levels of players. Some players as well, and we saw this last week with Camilo Vijaygas. I mean, Camilo, I believe, was somewhere 200-something on the FedEx Cup. There's also a partial status, 126 through 150. Camilo's just jumped, I think, up to, say, 147, 148 in that. And that basically means that you would get to play pretty much all of the lower-level PGA Tour events in 2024. So there's all of these different levels that players are playing to. But ultimately, you're getting a two-year exemption for winning the event this week, and you also gain, you know, a $1.2 million check. So when I see a lot of these players WDing from this, you know, and players that are in good nick, like Chess and Hadley, I know they've had a long year, but it kind of frustrates me slightly that there's a tournament here to be won, and a lot of players in good form suddenly just WD and say, well, actually, no, that's fine. I'm not going to Bermuda. I'm not going to play that. So it creates a big opportunity for a lot of players this week. And clearly, Lucas Herbert took that opportunity 2 years ago, his first PGA Tour victory. And last year, it was Seamus Power solidifying that top 50 spot with his second PGA Tour victory. So, yeah, a lot to play for in Bermuda.
Exactly right. I feel like that withdrawal pitch there has come from a place of hurt. We might find out a bit later on one of your selections. Yeah. But if Steve's there looked at, let's say, the mental side of it all, Ben, review. But let's move to the physical and the actual course itself. You remember very well. And in terms of the metrics and what you looked at when you dove into this course, because it's one that it's fair to say people definitely don't know as well.
Yeah, look, it's a short course by the coast. So whenever that's the formula, the weather is the dynamic that's hard to weigh up. It's had a big impact on this event on a couple of occasions. Lucas Herbert, when he won, defied really difficult conditions. I think if you look at the Roll of Honour, it's in its fifth year now. You'll struggle to find a more putter-heavy quartet of champions anywhere. They're just a who's who of fantastic putters, which always sort of worries me slightly. It suggests maybe a degree of random that I don't feel necessarily comfortable with. But look, on the other hand, it's a good chance to hone in on those guys who probably aren't as long and rely more on their putting, which is not really what carries you to the top of the world rankings these days. So we have seen some players take advantage of that. Brian Gay, probably most famously, a career renaissance for him when he beat Wyndham Clark. Interesting dynamic there is that we've had sort of generally, you know, Seamus hits the ball plenty far, so does Lucas Herbert, but generally speaking, the shorter hitters have found this more to their liking. But if Taylor Pendrith had hung on and if Wyndham Clark had beaten Brian Gay in a playoff, we'd be saying, well, two of the four champions or three of the four champions hit the ball an absolute mile. So it shows you how fragile these things can be. But in general, I would say it's a course where driver is not the most important club in the bag. And the putter might be. Certainly work around the greens and on the greens is going to be key this week. So probably more unfashionable golfers, if you like, for me this week than on several occasions. But I am aligned with Steve on the fact that we need to pay a very close attention to the motivational factors as well. And I think we'll probably see a couple of guys salvage their cards and what have you. And that certainly plays a part in my selections. The other thing just to note, as we speak, and this is obviously fluid, the wind's due to pick up at about lunchtime on Friday. So if you're in two minds, it might not be the worst week to sit tight and find out more about the weather and place your bets late on Wednesday, even Thursday morning, because potentially you could see a PM, AM draw bias here. But I wouldn't guarantee that. And I think that's probably the theme for the week. There's not a lot you can guarantee here. It's wide open and there are not many players I'd rule out with confidence.
This is great. This is one when you, I'm not going to guarantee anything. You get first, second, third. You could have done reverse forecast that the works, but you are right. I know it's only been four iterations, but 9 shots difference between Brendan Todd and a very still 2019 to Brian Gay in 2020. So we can see the impact that the weather and elements have there. Let's look into that field and some of those, you know, names we've mentioned who need potentially a bit of a week here. And other exciting names coming forward. We've got Adam Scott, the top of the market at 16s, and that there, that man, Brendan Todd, just below at 18s, alongside Thomas Dietrich. So the bookies are liking the core side of things. Then a very popular man on socials is Akshay Bhatia, who obviously has got a very bright future and went well last week, I believe, as well. And then Ben Griffin, just below him. And if we do the top 6 once again, that's Lucas Herbert rounding off also at 20-1 with Ben Griffin. And to throw one more in there, because we mentioned it, it's Taylor Pendrith in 7th place at 25-1. You can still get him. So some very good names there and some exciting futures for a lot of those guys. But Steve, who's going to kick us off in your selections?
I'm in the same mind as Ben. Putters. You know, it's obvious, isn't it? With Todd, Gay, Lucas Herbert could be an absolutely stunning putter. Also, though, the ability to scramble and strokes gained around the green. Now, we don't get strokes gained data here in Bermuda. The PGA Tour doesn't send the kit down. But it was interesting. When I just looked at the winners here across the four original renewals, and you just work through where those champions finished within their relevant skill sets, scrambling and putts per GIR were the most indicative numbers, more than greens in regulation. And it doesn't tend to happen particularly often. The one I've actually plumped for 2 25-1 chances. I know that Ben Griffin has been backed in. There's a small smidgen of 25-1 still around, but he's been backed into 22s and to 20-1. But if you're looking for a young golfer who's likely to make a breakthrough on the PGA Tour and score their first victory, Ben Griffin and Bermuda Grass Golf Courses does fit like a hand in a glove. I can remember him last year coming and just playing. I think he was on an invite, or he'd Monday qualified to the 2022 Wyndham Championship, and he finished fourth there. He was third here at Port Royal last year. I believe he was the 54-hole leader. He was also second, of course, last month at that Sanderson Farms Championship. That's the championship where there was a 5-man playoff down in Jackson, Mississippi. Griffin was involved. He'd had a big lead going into Sunday. I think he just needed to make par on 18 to actually take the championship. Made bogey, and that was the playoff 5-man with Luke List was in there, Scott Stallings. And in the end, I think Luke List, was it some kind of 40, 45 footer across the green and snapped up his second PGA Tour title. But Griffin plays great on Bermuda grass, decent enough by the coast. He was 23rd last week in Mexico, and he actually finished with closing rounds of 67, 66, just getting some forward momentum going. I genuinely think you just look at his Corn Ferry background as well. He's had second place runner-up finishes at Lakewood National, which is down in Florida, and also the BMW Charity Pro-Am, which is in the Carolinas. Now, that's got bent grass greens, but it's Bermuda grass everywhere else. That Lakewood National golf course is just Bermuda from tee right the way through to green. He just comes to the party on Bermuda grass agronomy. And I think that Griffin, of the shorter-priced players at the top there, was one that I had to take a punt on this week. So I'm on at 25-1.
It's a really wide open market at the top, isn't it? I think I counted an entire football team's worth of players between 14 and 28-1 yesterday. That's a UK football team. I have no idea how big an NFL team is, but I imagine it's but yeah, it's really hard to find a favourite. I do think it's a good opportunity for Thomas Dietrich, who's played well here and by the coast on the European Tour. But, you know, obviously yet to get off the mark, and that would make him one of few in that situation at the top. You look at Adam Scott, Brendan Todd, Akshay Bhatia, Lucas Herbert, they've done it before. Alex Noren, a class act, Lucas Glover, and Luke List, recent winners as well. So there is some winning form here, which you don't always get in a Bermuda Championship. And just anecdotally, I do think, although I agree with what Steve says about the opportunities that are being passed up by certain players here. I think broadly this new system has worked nicely, and I wasn't sure it would. So that's positive as we move towards an uncertain future. But in terms of coming to a selection at the top, I'm really struggling to nail my colours to one player. But I do think Alex Smalley is a real talent who has his conditions here. He's played a lot of good golf by the coast. He's a player who thrives with his approach play, one of the best iron players in this field. If he can get the putter firing, and it's been a loosely speaking, an encouraging start to the season. He had quite a long break before coming back, and he's played twice, and both of those starts would show encouragement. I remember at the Sanderson Farms thinking, if he'd had a run, I'd really fancy him for this. And in the end, the fact that he hadn't had a run is probably what kept him to sort of 13th or 15th rather than being involved potentially in that playoff. So Alex Smalley, definitely one to watch. He's played here well in the past. Certainly respect Ben Griffin, who, as Steve points out, has got his conditions. No mistake about that.
Perfect. Okay, Alex Smalley and Ben Griffin to start us off there. And Steve, you mentioned your second pick, again, looked around that sort of mid-20s, 30s market for a bit of value.
Yeah, another player. I know that Ben likes this individual. Ben's tipped him up quite a lot in the past. He's a player that's played President's Cup golf for the international team. I mean, last year his consistency was pretty amazing. Six top 13 finishes across seven tournaments. That effectively forced a captain's pick from Trevor Immelman, Taylor Pendriff, and as Ben alluded to earlier as well. He was the 54-hole leader here in 2021. That was the year that Lucas Herbert came with a tremendous round in gusting 30, 35-mile-an-hour conditions on the Sunday. Now, Pendriff, at that point, had just been promoted from the Corn Ferry Tour. We're now 2 years down the line from there, a more all-rounded player. He's kind of had a bit of an off 2023, but of note recently, third at the Shriners Open. He was 15th last week at that WWT Championship over in Mexico. So playing some good golf. As I said, he's the kind of player that once he finds his game can just roll off contending performances week after week after week. And with Pendriff, I don't think, you know, if Pendriff was to win, he seems to be the kind of golfer, Taylor, when you look at him. When he does get into contending performances, at this point, hasn't converted. Lots of seconds, a lot of thirds. But at some point, he was second as well, memorably, at the Rocket Mortgage Classic last year. At some point, it's all going to come together. And again, with Pendriff, a player that can score very, very heavily, if he can get off to a good start on Thursday when the conditions are, they're looking to be very soft. There's been a lot of rain here. September and October, a lot of tropical good storms in September. Likely to be soft conditions, fairways and greens. If you can get off to a hot start here, potentially get on the right side of the draw if there is going to be this wind impact on the Friday, I think Pendriff could be a decent bet this week as well with Ben Griffin. So those are my two 25-1 shots.
Certainly, yeah, wouldn't be a surprise were he to get off the mark, would it? Seems to have found something with the putter, which is basically all he needs to do. You know, if he can find something with a putter and a bit of rub of the green at the right time, then definitely he's up to winning a tournament like this. A couple of others to mention. I think you have to respect Nick Hardy. I don't think it's necessarily the course for him, but I do like the fact, as Steve said, it's probably a bit softer. Whether that changes the dynamic fully, we'll see. But he's a player who, you know, officially is a PGA Tour winner now after teaming up with Davis Riley last year to win the Zurich Classic of New Orleans. He got better as the week went on in Mexico. I think partly, just briefly on Mexico, part of my struggle with this tournament is that course in Mexico last week was so different, and I'm just not sure how it's going to hold up as a form guide. So that'd be my one sort of note of caution. You know, very hard to miss a fairway at that golf course, and the greens are absolutely massive, and it's just all new, and I don't know how it will translate. This is a different challenge this week, but if Nick Hardy can pick up where he left off, he's certainly a player with loads of talent, and one of those who you could easily on another day, if he played slightly better last week, you could have seen him going off at the same sort of price as Pendriff for this, but it's just such a congested market at the top, so for now I'm going to go bigger prices, and what I do like is Marty Du. Might see him listed as Zicheng Du with your bookmaker. A definite talent, we know that. A winner in the Bahamas broadly similar conditions and similar course on the Corn Ferry Tour. Also lost a playoff in the Bahamas, so could easily have won twice under this kind of scenario. He opened 65-65 here last year, and that was during a generally slow start to his rookie season on the PGA Tour. Look, his form is not great of late, but I would note that his first three events of this fall series or whatever we're calling it, until last week when we didn't have strokes gain data, he gained strokes not just off the tee, but also with his approaches. The nagging doubt is the putter, and in general, I'm trying to look more reliable putters for this event. But I do like the fact, as well as that form I mentioned, and as well as the fact he was 17th here last year, his best performance in the early stages of the season. I do like the fact he's 127th in the FedEx Cup, because I think he's got a touch of class, and his game isn't far away. And with his back against the wall, he's got two tournaments left to get into that top 125. It's not the be-all and end-all. As Steve mentioned earlier, you're going to get some starts if you're 127th as he is now. But there's absolutely no doubt. You only have to look at these players and how they respond when they do achieve things like making the top 125. We saw it in Qatar a couple of weeks ago in Europe. It does matter to these players. It will be at the front of their minds. It will be motivational. And for a player like Du, who is definitely a big talent, at 66-1, I think I don't mind chancing the putter, even though, as I said, I'm generally with better putters. And given that I've just said better putters, I'll give you my other sort of fairly big price is Peter Malnati. There aren't many events where I really consider Peter, because he's a short hitter, not always a straight hitter either, which is a pretty bad combination if you're aiming to make it pay on the PGA Tour. But when he gets Bermuda greens and a contest that isn't about the driver, he's a real threat. We saw that when he won the Sanderson Farms. We've seen it several times in conditions like this. He's finished 21st and 7th here. He's shot 63. And again, he's got that sort of FedEx Cup angle. He's 122nd. So if he can one more good week, he locks up his card for next year. And I'm sure I'm not alone in being a real fan of Peter. He speaks very eloquently and with a great sort of verve and passion for the game. And it'd be nice to see him lock up his status. So as I say, generally, I find it hard to get excited about a player like him, with all due respect. But this is the course. You know, when you see Brian Gay on the Roll of Honour, well, if there's a less prolific version of Brian Gay on the tour now, it might well be Peter Malnati. So hopefully he can get that second win.
Great. Well, I can already see the headline now of "Can Marty do it?" As he brings it home for you. And I nearly interrupted you there, Steve. When you opened up with Taylor Pendrith, you went, "I know Ben likes him. He's a great player. He's been on him a lot. He's been in the President's Cup." I was like, "Justin is clearly playing in South Africa. We've moved on." But yeah, there's one other player we've got there, and it's Taylor Pendrith. So to bring it home for us, Steve, have you got one or maybe even two of those longer shots down the list for us?
I had a short list of, well, what shall I say? I had a short list of six and went with four. Now, okay, as we know, or as I'm about to allude to, Mackenzie Hughes withdrew. I mean, if we're talking about great putters, players that play well by the coast, a golf course where driving isn't the be-all and end-all, I think Mackenzie Hughes fitted like a hand in the glove, but he's withdrawn. So what I've done is I've brought the two others from the shortlist back into my thinking this week. So I've used the stake money from Hughes. I've got Brandon Wu at 50-1. I've also got Lanto Griffin at 60-1 and Henrik Norlander at 80-1. Let's go in reverse order with Norlander first. 121st in the FedEx Cup standing. So like Malnati, very much on the cusp of trying to keep their in the case of Norlander, actually regain full playing privileges for 2024, because Norlander's been playing off 126, 150 status this year. But when you look at Norlander, very, very easy to read. It's Bermuda grass, it's short golf courses. He's not the best putter in the world, which kind of goes against what we're wanting. But when it comes to Bermuda grass golf courses, the putting improves. He likes shorter tests, goes well by the coast. So I took the 80-1 on Henrik Norlander. He was another one that made that playoff a few weeks ago at the Sanderson Farm. So Norlander's in decent nick, but needs to continue playing well this week in Bermuda. I've gone for Lanto Griffin. Now, Lanto Griffin's gone through some quite serious problems this year, especially with his own body. He's had issues with, there's quite a list over the last 18 months. He ruptured a disc in his lower back. He then fractured a rib. And when he came back from that, Lanto Griffin was renowned as being the kind of player that pretty much year in, year out was in the top 40, top 45 for strokes gained putting. All of a sudden, Griffin came back, setup wasn't great, and started putting poorly. That seems to have been remedied. He's actually referenced the fact that he had some time with tour coach Scott Hamilton. All of a sudden, the putter's firing again. Now, Lanto was the midway and 54-hole leader at the Shriners Open a few weeks ago in Las Vegas, putted very well, did well enough last week. And you just look at his coastal form, it's kind of understated. A couple of 13th places at the Plantation course at Kapalua, where they play the Tournament of Champions each year. So that's an elite company. He's had a 7th at the Sony Open, a 12th and a 7th at Torrey Pines, 9th and 16th at Pebble Beach. He was 18th here on his first go. So I think Lanto Griffin at 60-1 is a decent punt. And finally, Brandon Wu, 50-1. Again, the kind of player that plays very, very well on coastal locations. The thing with Wu is, second this year at Pebble Beach. He's had a 7th and a 3rd at Puerto Rico. That's on Paspalum. Even a 6th in 2022 last year at the Renaissance when they played the 2022 Genesis Scottish Open. So 5 of Wu's 7 PGA Tour top 10s have been on courses within a stone's throw of the sea. So I think Brandon Wu's another one that if he was to take out his maiden PGA Tour victory this week at Bermuda, a course that he's played twice and finished in the top 35 both times, I wouldn't be overly surprised by that either. So Wu, Lanto, I'm doubling up on the Griffins this week. I've got both Griffins. I've got Lanto as well at 60-1 and Henrik Norlander at 80-1.
I was about to say, with both Griffins, I think Norlander's got lucky. It wasn't Brandon Wu and Dylan Wu for the Woo-Woos, which is probably the biggest cocktail in Bermuda that will be sold this week. But there's Norlander as well. Brilliant stuff. Plenty of names there. So I'm just going to quickly recap it all before we say goodbye and thank you to the guys. Just to recap all of those tips today, and we'll start with Ben Coley at the Ned Bank. He had Aaron Rye, Justin Rose, Jason Scrivener and Sean Crocker heading up his selections over in Sun City. And then on the other side of the Atlantic in Bermuda, it was Alex Smalley, Marty Doe and Peter Malnati. And Steve Bamford in South Africa had Aaron Rye as well, with Matt Wallace, Marcel Seam and Dan Bradbury as a longer shot. And finish it off in America, well, technically Bermuda on the PGA Tour, with Ben Griffin, Taylor Pendrith, Henrik Norlander, Brandon Wu, and finally Lanto Griffin. Yes, thank you so much for your time, Ben and Steve. All that hard work and research, hopefully finding us some winners. It was great to have you both back on this week. Ben is on Twitter at Ben Coley Golf. And Ben, let's just, because we now know who has come through from the Challenge Tour, give us one name to keep an eye on heading into next season, which is pretty much a few days after Dubai.
It is, yeah. Listen, Alex Fitzpatrick is the clear potential star among the graduates. There are a couple of others who could, careers don't always go as we expect them to. But, I think everybody expects Alex to be, I don't want to get too carried away, but to be in the Ryder Cup conversation by the time that comes around again. That's the level we're talking. So I think he'd be the one. Couple of good young French players. Tom Vaillant does look very promising. He's got a big career in front of him. But in the immediate, because what you're asking me really is who's going to make people a bit of money this side of Christmas. That was the subtext. I would say that now Brandon Stone's got his card back, going back down into events where he's comfortable. He's still got a few short game problems, Brandon Stone, but he's a class act. We know that. He only just got his card back, but I think that will free him up nicely. And he will know full well that he can't afford to rest on his laurels. He needs to go and take care of business as soon as possible. This will have been a really chastening year for him down on the Challenge Tour, and one from which he'll have learned plenty. I think he turned 30 earlier this year. So there's still more to come from Brandon Stone. So in the short, long term, Alex Fitzpatrick, no prizes for originality. In the short term, Brandon Stone might win you a few quid this side of Christmas.
Perfect. Love it. Yeah. Okay. And good memories this week. Ned Bank, Brandon Stone, Chase the Ace. Nearly good memories. I've never seen him more frustrated as he didn't make it on that hole, but a good day out. That was worth a rewatch. Steve Bamford at Bamford Golf. Thank you so much for joining us. Say we hit the crossbar, didn't we, with your first week? Matty Schmidt looked like he had it done until the 70th hole at some very nice odds. We don't have you on next week for Dubai. So just a little sneak preview. We know the Earth course pretty well by now. Who's one name that you'll be keeping a close eye on and we can think about?
It's a tasty looking event, isn't it? John Rahm, Rory McIlroy, Victor Hovland, probably the three best players on current form in the world, not disregarding Scottie Scheffler. Do you know what? I've got a sneaky feeling that Tyrrell Hatton's going to play very, very well next week. So I'll throw Tyrrell Hatton out there.
Love it. Perfect. We like Tyrrell here. Well, there you go. That's everything. Plenty of names for there for you both this week and even looking at next week and the future with Alex Fitzpatrick and Brandon Stone. But thank you for joining us. Next week will be our final episode of the season as we conclude the DP World Tour Championship in Dubai. And of course, as mentioned, the RSM Classic. Thanks for listening. Enjoy the golf. Good luck with your picks and see you next time on The Tips.